Hello, fellow newsheads and news other parts of your bodies. It's me, your news dad, here to tuck you into your weird little news beds with a plate of delicious news cookies and a tall glass of frothy news milk. Because for some reason, you're children, but also Santa Claus in this analogy. But anywho, a whole bunch of stuff happened this past month that we've yet to talk about, and we'll definitely talk about more in the future, but we wanted to sort of talk about it now. And you know, we're getting a little more support as a show, and figured it might be nice to get a really spiffy one out there for you. Something clean and professional that also crams an irresponsible amount of complex stories into a short amount of time. So, in the spirit of the Nickelodeon Super Toy Run, I'm going to blast through as much news as possible in the next half hour or so, more than a half hour, elbowing you in the throat with current events, just like I did to that kid who tried to grab the last mecha neck. Do we know what that is? Is that a reference I understand? No. Okay. Anyway, I made elbow pads out of magazines for safety reasons. Here's some fucking news!
Stuff that happened this past month that we've yet to talk about, and we'll definitely talk about more in the future, but wanted to talk about now as well.
That's right, melon farmers. This is like a news episode where I actually just talk about things that happened in the news. We're like doing the news. I'm your news anchor. It's like a show where I don't just rant about one thing until you're all sad, but many things until you're all sad. Perhaps we'll get some sad teens interested in us, maximize our sad reach, you know? Maybe I should get a nice tie or something, but also I won't be doing that. First news story, go!
Bill Maher v. AOC, Gown of Justice.
Oh yeah, Batman v. Superman, that's what all the kids are talking about. So earlier last month, the nation's wealthiest people finally felt comfortable enough amid the swelling number of COVID deaths to throw themselves a neat little costume party. The Met Gala, an annual fundraising event for the Metropolitan Museum of Art, was held on September 13th, signifying the end of the pandemic and a welcome return to normalcy. I was invited, but I didn't go. You're welcome. Also, it says here the pandemic is not over. Over at all, in fact. Interesting. But look, those fancy dresses weren't going to buy themselves, you joyless ogres! You fucking serfs! Bow to your Susian quilt lord and his shadow queen! The prom night for rich people understandably drew its fair share of critics, including noted keymaster of shitty opinions, Bill Maher. On an episode of Real Time, the current incarnation of his long-running panel show until he inevitably claims the 9/11 hijackers created Harry Potter or some shit and it gets canceled again, Maher pointed out the questionable optics of having the glamorous Hollywood elite attend an ostentatious ball in the second year of a global pandemic and strike maskless poses alongside masked event staff, especially when that staff is expected to do things like carry Kelly Cuoco's dress train like a mouse who got turned into a butler by her fairy godmother. Now, I'm literally sacrificing 14 months of my life to the abyss to say this, but that specific statement is actually a good point by Bill Maher. The Met Gala is, on many levels, pretty much the last thing we needed right now. But what wasn't a good point was what Maher had to say about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the representative of New York's 14th District, who attended the event wearing a dress with the phrase "Tax the Rich" stenciled across the back like something out of the smash hit film Cruella, a movie about a stylish dog assassin. Maher, who never misses an opportunity to say something so obtuse that it somehow transcends stupidity like an idiot Siddhartha, took AOC's wardrobe statement to task on a recent episode of Real Time.
This is something that, you know, the Met Gala attracts lots of crazy outfits, but this is a new thing that people have been doing. They've been wearing, I guess, their message, their life philosophy, tax the rich. I just want to read the, I had some sets here. Oh, New York City, 65,000, the richest 65,000 New Yorkers out of 8 million people pay 51% of taxes.
And what proportion is that?
I'm just saying, 65,000 out of 8 million pay half.
And their taxes
are
still
too low.
So
it's not like we don't tax the rich at all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Cool shrug after totally missing the point of something, Bill. This, I guess, point he's making is about as stable as a drunk circus bear with a Gordon Gekko haircut on his first day on the unicycle. Not a stable bear is his point. It's the same intellectually dishonest gotcha thinking behind saying all lives matter as a response to Black Lives Matter. Playground semantics used in the final throes of a dying argument. Because she's not saying we don't tax the rich at all, Bill. Obviously, that's not what she means. She's saying they need to pay more, you know? Because maybe it's a bad thing that the wealthiest people in the history of the world pay roughly the same, if not fewer, taxes as a shift worker struggling to afford rent and healthcare, if they pay any at all. Because I don't know if you know this, but that's a tad bit of a problem in America, Bill. He does know that. He has just always not wanted to pay taxes. Also, remember when the last guy, you know, cut taxes? Did you like that or him? And it's clear that Billiam understands all of this, because after this moment, we get to watch him sadly deflate like an unwanted boner in real time, hence the name of his show.
There are lots of things we need to amend about the capitalist system. We have crony capitalism in this country, no doubt about it. I'm just saying, you wear tax the rich on your ass. And people are always saying rich don't pay taxes. They pay some taxes. They pay a big part of the freight already. I'm not saying it shouldn't be more, perhaps, but let's not lie.
Hey, Bill. Weird how you mocked AOC's message and then ended up endorsing it by the end of the segment, which actually is pretty darn emblematic of Marr as a political commentator. Sometimes, most times, Bill likes to sort of dance around a controversial point while ultimately not saying much of anything, vaguely contradict in that smug devil's advocate way that no one likes before ultimately just agreeing or standing down after tiring everyone out. It's just so very clear he doesn't even completely believe what he's saying, but HBO pays him millions of dollars a year to be a performative contrarian who, say, criticizes Obamacare for not being literally single payer, and when he has Bernie Sanders on, criticize him for wanting to pay for healthcare with taxes, and also casually mentions how all we need to do is raise taxes so people's babies don't die. So, you know, what are you gonna do? Not watch his show is what you should do. In case that wasn't clear. Or do. I don't know. I'm not your boss. I'm just your news dad. Bill is, of course, just one of many gotcha ghouls trying to deflect AOC's message by muddling it with accusations of hypocrisy, like lying and saying that she bought a ticket to the gala, or this New York Post article correctly pointing out that the dress's designer actually has a history of not paying taxes, as if that somehow negates the message instead of reinforces it. Because none of this should conclude that AOC is perfect either, or not also part of a game of clapbacks and publicity stunts. And perhaps even this idea of raising awareness of taxing the rich isn't needed so much as actually pushing legislation to tax the rich more, which, in fairness, AOC does try to do. But ultimately, this act of wearing a dress at a fancy celebrity ball doesn't really do much of anything but feed people like Bill Maher, and the cycle just keeps going until we all run out of water. I mean, not all of us, just the poor. Also,
I think it's incredibly important, because when we talk about supporting working families and when we talk about having a fair tax code, oftentimes this conversation is happening among working and middle class people amongst themselves. And I think it's time that we bring all classes into the conversation.
Bring all classes into the conversation, you say? Really, you said? You don't think maybe there's one class of people who, you know, has been at the table long enough? Like, maybe class collaboration isn't the best solution to class conflict when the conflict is coming from the top, and, like, bringing all classes to the table is a way to sort of dilute what needs to be done? Like, maybe if all classes are present, maybe there's one that will sort of, you know, take over the conversation so it's not actually fair? Anyway, I don't know. I guess who gives a shit or whatever. And so let's just stop talking about it. Boom. Story one done. Dramatic stuff. Keep it moving.
Proud Boys v. Antifa, morons of justice.
Ah, yes, the Proud Boys, aka America's premier group of fascist dumplings cosplaying as their favorite Call of Duty skins. About a month back, these weird Nazi freaks took a break from their online Nazi study groups to be Nazis in public, holding a Summer of Love rally in Portland, Oregon on August 23rd. The Proud Boys, which you will notice I am pronouncing with a Z because they would hate that, or they'd love it, I don't know, it's just fun, were met with resistance from anti-fascist protesters, and the confrontation quickly escalated into a day of violence that saw dozens of people get maced, shot with paintball guns, and brutally beaten, including one unarmed man who was savagely attacked by a Proud Boy in his vehicle. Or as Andy No would explain it, a vehicle was smashed by, ooh, who can say? Weird how he seemingly deleted that tweet. tweet, and how Andy Ngo has a whole lot of tweets he'll spam out and then delete later, like this one recapping recent Antifa violence that lists three events, the first being a reporter that was stabbed by an anti-masker and not anti-fascist, the second being when a man yelled racial slurs and then fired a gun at Antifa members, and the third being a Proud Boy who was shot in the foot during a scuffle that, to be fair, probably was with Antifa. I don't know, pretty weird that this self-proclaimed reporter slash terrorism expert, who was allowed to testify to the Senate, would tweet out this list of events as Antifa violence, despite most of them not being that, like he was lying or something, or maybe he's not a very good reporter, I don't know. At one point, his Twitter banner was drawn by a white nationalist, and he has been seen just hanging out with them, but I'm sure it's just a weird mistake, or maybe he's a liar and propagandist for fascists. Anywho, the Portland police declined to intervene in all of this, stating that the people involved should be responsible for keeping themselves separate.
People should be aware, as the chief had said in his statement last night, people should not necessarily expect to see the police standing in the middle of the crowd trying to keep people apart. People need to keep themselves apart and avoid physical confrontation.
Now, this is a noticeable departure from the standard operating procedure the cops observe when literally anyone other than white supremacists hold a rally. Truly, some of those that work forces are the same that work forces while sporting visible racist tattoos. And as I mentioned, this lack of police intervention all ended with some racist dude firing at a group of anti-fascist protesters from behind a trash can. Although because of the guy's general density and choice of attire, it initially appeared as though the garbage can itself was shooting at people. One of the Antifa protesters returned fire with approximately 7 shots fired in total. Thankfully, nobody was killed, and the literal gunfight was enough to get the cops to finally show up, though it must be stressed that the reason the unchecked street war LARP didn't end in a multiple murder had nothing to do with the cops and everything to do with the shooter's aim. Damn fine police work, as always. Weird pattern where white supremacists are completely ignored until it's too late, and you have to wonder how involved the cops would have been if, say, anti-fascist protesters or Black Lives Matter activists had been the ones out there smashing up cars. Except, no, you don't have to wonder, because we literally have, figuratively, thousands of hours of video of it. Interesting-ish coinky shit, that very same day, Proud Boy leader Enrique Terrio was sentenced to 5 months for destruction of property and attempted possession of a large-capacity ammunition feeding device. He was participating in a protest against the election of Joe Biden last December, like a little snowflake, when he and a number of others pulled down a Black Lives Matter banner from Asbury United Methodist Church in Washington, D.C., and set it on fire. Terrio was arrested on January 4th, 2 days before the January 6th attack on the Capitol, with several weapon magazines in his car, hence the second charge. Whew! Bullet dodged, am I right? Imagine what could have happened had he successfully transported all of that ammunition to Washington. It's a good thing we have no reason to believe another armed insurrection will happen again anytime, or that this will continue to compound in some stupid way, or like, they still don't know who planted all those pipe bombs for some reason. Can you imagine if they still didn't know who that was? To signal that I am comforted and safe, I shall wipe my brow again. Man, this is some hot content, you guys. Let's continue to engage with our audience with our next story. Maybe something hip and cool, celebrity news, or
the California recall v. Gavin Newsom, yawn of justice.
It's a no then. Okay, that's fine. Well, Californians got to participate in a $250 million gubernatorial recall election in the middle of an historic pandemic earlier this month because a bunch of raging crab humans were mad at the current governor for even suggesting that they briefly cover their faces with a mask while chewing handfuls of peanuts from the communal table bucket at Texas Roadhouse. Got it. To be fair and balanced, TMCR, the official recall's listed grievances were that Newsom overtaxed his citizens, failed to enforce immigration laws, rationed water use, and I guess didn't do enough death penalty stuff. So it's almost gracious of me to just say they didn't like COVID restrictions. But also, I don't love Gavin Newsom either. Not for,
not killing enough prisoners, but rather how much he failed with stuff like homelessness and lifting the lockdown way too early and a bunch of other things. But this wasn't about the ways he actually sucks, so much as the pretend ways he sucks. His actions have to date only been slightly more than the bare minimum required to manage the biggest public health crisis in modern American history. And yet that mediocre lockdown and his attending a fancy, and to be honest, schmancy dinner, was still enough to provoke a bunch of desperate weirdos to put the state through a costly, distracting recall, even as daily COVID death tolls continue to rise. Then, we did the recall vote! And even though only about one quarter of the state actually participated in it, the recall was quickly rejected, with approximately 62% voting no at the time of this recording, because who the fuck are all of these people wasn't an option on the ballot. Much like gripping a beehive between your powerful glutes and blasting a fart through its winding passages like an ass harmonica, an ass monica, news of the recall rallied a swarm of fucked up, stinging insects, all looking to throw their hat into the ring of potential new governors. A murderer's row of besuited gremlins came out of the woodwork to bog the ballot down with dozens of names. You had to unfurl the thing like a wizard's scroll, like the king had just mailed you your draft papers for the Battle of Bellinger's Grove. Only it was a piece of paper, asking you to check a box to decide whether some guy named Gavin gets to keep his job. The frontrunner of these fart-drenched bees was Larry Elder, a conservative media host best known for pulling a gun on his girlfriend. And he was the most popular bee.
Save the bees, just not these bees.
And even though on its face, the recall may seem like a laughably pathetic attempt that was doomed to fail, it's important to remember that it was prompted by a motion filed with 1.7 million signatures, just 4% of the state's population of 40 million. It's another example of how tiny pockets of windy assholes can ruin everything for everyone. And more importantly, how the recall was an unspoken testing ground for the current GOP strategy of gaming free and fair elections. The end result being a waste of every single human's time. Hey, remember that mess of an Arizona election audit run by a pro-Trump cyber company no one had heard of? You know, Cyber Ninja? Well, turns out, they found zero evidence of election fraud and once again called the state for Biden. Or, to put it another way, in the same week that Donald Trump sued his niece for $100 million, he also lost the same election a third time. Triple loser Donald Trump. Anyway, the point is, good job, California and Arizona, way to spend $300 million and $9 million respectively on something everybody already knew. But of course, this is the idea. If you can't win elections anymore, you just have to keep pretending you are winning and drumming up accusations until, well, see previous story about Proud Boys and the Capitol insurrection. And so the GOP were so ready to call election fraud on this recall that they did it before the election even happened. And then for the second time in a short time, the Democratic Party was forced to call upon its supporters to cast their ballots for an aggressively milquetoast candidate. The political equivalent of an open box of store brand soda, Professor Beverage, or Juices Up, or Diet Zest Crunch, or whatever, in order to prevent the collapse of democracy. It's been a magnificent year. Oh, it's the fuckface horn, or I haven't named the horn yet, but it means that it's now time for Cody Goes to the Movies. Hey, welcome to Cody's Movie Hour, the Cody Shody in Hollywoody, where I talk about the latest in woke Tinseltown. Here's some movie news. Reviews! You know, I don't think I've actually seen anything recently. So, so sorry about all of this. I guess let's just keep going with the regular news. But, you know, I'll totally start watching some movies, I guess. I'm so sorry. Okay, let's get sexy with
U.S. military drone v. innocent civilians. Probably no justice.
gotta start reading the sections before I segue. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Again, I'm just so sorry. And hey, speaking of sorry, in the latest U.S. military whoopsie goof of nincompoopian proportions, the most powerful nation in the history of the world instructed one of their Freedom drones to launch Freedom Hellfire missiles into a family's driveway in Kabul on August 29th, freeing as many as 10 civilians, including 7 children. The military initially lied about the strike, calling it a resounding success that had prevented a known ISIS affiliate from delivering explosives to his fellow terrorists. What the strike had actually done was annihilate 43-year-old Zamari Ahmadi, an engineer working for the aid group Nutrition and Education International, as he was delivering water to his family. So it was kind of like terrorism in the sense that he was terrorizing thirst. Like the way the Kool-Aid man breaks through walls, I guess, or how Professor Beveridge fucks your crush in front of you. After nearly 3 weeks of boldly insisting that the attack was a righteous strike, the best kind of strike, that had neutralized multiple suicide bombers, the worst kind of bombers, the Pentagon finally admitted that they had killed way less Islamic State members than initially reported, a grand total of 0. And way more children. 7, to be exact, if you recall that number from earlier. Also, and extremely important, the military only admitted any wrongdoing after independent investigations by outlets including the Washington Post and the New York Times pushed back against the official report, citing that no evidence of any explosive material was discovered at the site apart from the patriotic bombs hurled by the US's equally patriotic war bots. Meanwhile, evidence to the contrary, including statements from the president of Nutrition and Education International, and security camera footage showing Ahmadi loading up his car with water and not, bombs, continued to challenge the Pentagon's version of events. True to form, the Pentagon drove this truth-suppressing bus until the wheels fell off, sticking to their remotely operated guns until the last possible moment, which will forever be until we can no longer credibly deny it. And so Marine General Frank McKenzie, head of U.S. Central Command, finally apologized.
I offer my profound condolences to the family and friends of those who were killed. This strike was taken in the earnest belief that it would prevent an imminent threat to our forces and the evacuees at the airport. But it was a mistake, and I offer my sincere apology.
See? He's sorry! So everything is okay again. General Poutface Childmurder went on to say that the strike occurred after as many as 6 drones tracked Ahmadi's car for roughly 8 hours in the same press conference with a straight face. So I'm not an expert, and in fact I'm pretty high right now, but if you spy on someone for an entire day and then decide to shoot missiles at their car while it is parked in a residential driveway, that's not a mistake. That's empowered incompetence, and it is functioning as designed. Like, if you own a restaurant and someone comes in and places an order and you stare at the ticket for 8 hours before making the order completely wrong and dropping a basket of grenades on their table, you didn't make a tragic mistake. You're a murderer who shouldn't be allowed to own a restaurant or grenades, honestly. Also, are we just gonna breeze past the part where the military was happy to just lie about this until someone caught them? And like, I don't know, kind of makes you think about all the times they got away with bombing innocent people, right? You know, how a whole lot of cops suddenly got caught shooting unarmed black people once camera phones were invented, and then we realized that a lot of them were white nationalists, see above story about Proud Boys, and then realized on that realization that this was probably happening for, like, since America. And so perhaps this isn't something we just move on from. Perhaps we need to have a serious think about our military and what they are and aren't allowed to do. And, consequences. All right. Because we're somehow okay with the idea of all of our governments zooming around the globe on remote-controlled gliders, lobbing bombs at people like the goddamn Green Goblin. McKenzie got to go on TV and apologize for unilaterally murdering nearly a dozen people without finishing the press conference in handcuffs. In an effort to make amends for America's latest war crime, McKenzie added that the military was considering paying restitution to the families of the victims. Considering! Well, Hopefully, they consider restitution for longer than 8 hours before wiping it off the face of the earth, despite the undeniably magnanimous gesture of promising to maybe think about deciding to possibly hold themselves accountable one day in the future. Amadi's brother Amal, whose 3-year-old daughter was among those killed in the strike, told Mackenzie to stuff his sorries in a sack and then climb in that sack and eat fistfuls of his own shit. Gobble it up, like a green goblin. Amadi demanded the persons responsible for ordering the strike be punished, insisting that the U.S. military's vast surveillance network should have been able to see that his brother's car was surrounded by children, considering the military surveilled his brother's car with multiple drones for 8 fuck-shitting hours before calling in an airstrike on his driveway and then lied about it for weeks. It's hard not to see his point. Maybe the United States should start punishing its war criminals instead of doing that other thing we've been doing with them. It's a senseless, infuriating tragedy. But I'll rest a little easier tonight knowing that the military is considering the possibility of doing something to help that poor family it obliterated. Maybe sometime down the road. But I guess in the meantime, here's the link to the donation page for Nutrition and Education International. They probably need a hand since the US is fucking bombing their employees, you know? Pretty grim stuff. The closest we've come to appealing to kids in this episode is talking about them exploding. And again, I apologize. But you know what? Let's actually get sexy with
Sex Workers v. Banks, Gone of Coitus.
Hey, that time at work, kind of. It's been a rough month for OnlyFans. The subscription service connecting content creators directly with their supporters had emerged over the last year as one of the platforms of choice for sex workers to self-produce pictures and video, as it provides them with a creator-driven subscription model without having to mess with all the heinous bullshit sex workers normally have to deal with thanks to puritanical legislation and the failure of FOSTA SESTA that does them more harm than good. OnlyFans reported a monthly payout figure of approximately $300 million to over 1 million users, easily making it the most popular platform for creators to distribute content both sexually explicit and fussily chaste. But in that good old American tradition of doing more harm than good, OnlyFans announced in August that they would no longer support sexually explicit content on their platform beginning in October. The company cited blowback from banks who were uncomfortable processing payments that were in any way connected to nips, tips, and or drips. OnlyFans founder and CEO Tim Stokely, who has so far foolishly not changed his name to Tip Stokely, said they had no choice but to ban pornographic content from their platform so that the electronic payments they make to creators, completely divorced from any information about how that money was earned, would be less embarrassing, I guess? Like, seriously, the reason given was reputational risk to the banks. Banks being businesses that, as we all know, have a really good reputation otherwise. And apparently, they can tell which OnlyFans payments were for sex stuff and which ones were for baking tips from struggling stand-up comedians. And if anything should be banned, we ban them! I mean, obviously, it's that second thing, am I right? Am I right, people? To be clear, it shouldn't matter whether the revenue passing through these banks are totally anonymous numbers on a spreadsheet or stapled to a stack of meticulous line item receipts detailing every moist, trembling deposit. Banks shouldn't get to decide they're too good for your cash. If you walk into a bank with a dirty sock full of ripped money, they have to take it. If I take one money and I tear that money in half, stick that smaller half of the money in my mouth, and chew on that money, and swallow the money, I can take the uneaten half of the money to any bank, and they are legally required to give me a new money. It's true, I do this all the time. My turds look like a chia pet. It's pretty gross. Like all turds. Also, money is fake. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that, but it's a thing we made up. And banks are lucky we, for some reason, pretend money isn't fake. And that they need a house where people rent space for their pretend money to live. So as long as no laws were broken, banks super shouldn't be able to say one solitary word about how their customers earned the money they're depositing. Or whether it's chewed up, or ripped, or quite obviously was pooped out at some point. Because if you eat half, and deposit the other half, you can still deposit the poop half later and get double money. It's all in my financial advice book, Literally Shitting Money by Cody K. Johnston. I lost so much money publishing that. The point is, it's like super weird that these banks would be afraid of embarrassment or have shame for the first time in ever. But it turns out that this isn't even close to new. Weirdly enough, banks specifically have a long and upsetting history of icing out sex work, even if it means doing blatantly discriminatory stuff. Back in 2014, Chase suddenly closed down bank accounts for hundreds of porn stars without giving a single good reason for it, and there were rumors that the DOJ had actually ordered them to do it. Many financial investors have morality clauses built in that prevent them from working with any sex-related startups. Just this year, MasterCard rewrote their rules to be more restrictive to sex workers. We could, and will, do an entire episode about the quaint Victorian sensibilities of banks and governments. But for now, unsurprisingly, news of the looming pornography ban left many sex workers feeling betrayed by a platform they had played such an integral part in establishing. Not one single goddamn soul on this violently spinning globe of land and sea had ever heard of OnlyFans until sex workers began producing content for it. It's like when they kicked Richard Donner off of Superman 2, or when they tore Justice League from the bosom of Zack Snyder and tossed it to Joss Whedon, like a suckling babe to a hungry lion, or when they recast Victoria with Bryce Dallas Howard after Rachel Levesque had already played her for two whole Twilight movies. That one really stung. Have some decorum, OnlyFans. Dance with the person who brought you. Like when Bella danced with Edward at her prom. Ah, the Twilight films. In fact, as several people with memories longer than a goldfish have pointed out, issuing blanket bans targeting sexually explicit material on platforms that were raised from obscurity by sex workers looking for safe and reasonably non-exploitative avenues to distribute their material has worked out terribly for websites in the past. Do you remember Tumblr? The once popular microblogging site issued a statewide ban on all sexually explicit content in December 2018 after a child pornography incident briefly saw the Tumblr app removed from Apple's iOS App Store. The content targeted by the ban included any images of genitalia or female presenting nipples, a phrase which indicates that Tumblr both understands gender is a societal construct and is totally cool with enforcing bizarre double standards based on your choice of pronoun. Speaking of the kaleidoscope of appropriate situations in which the word bizarre would be appropriate, you might also recall that Tumblr was purchased by Yahoo in 2013 for a sum of $1.1 billion, only to eventually be sold to WordPress Operator Automatic in 2019 for a reported amount of less than $3 million. After losing more than 30% of their users following the site-wide ban on pornography the previous December. Another less remembered but way more relevant example is Patreon's years-long struggle to support sex workers on their platform that has ultimately failed thanks to, you guessed it, payment partners. Because it turns out that even the cool, hip, alt banks with the LaCroix bars and seaweed snacks and free ecstasy Fridays are still 100 years in the past when it comes to sex work. But hey, a little good news, because less than a week after announcing the impending ban on sexually explicit material, OnlyFans reversed their decision, saying that they had managed to come to an agreement with their banking partners, lest they lose a female-presenting tit mountain of cash and credibility. It was a small but welcome victory for sex workers and the normalization of their very old profession, but it's nowhere near the end of this saga against this financial cabal of finger-wagging weirdos who have been shitting in their sexy Wheaties for decades. Just let them sell their sexy Wheaties, guys! What are we doing here? If you took any one of these bank CEOs' masturbation sessions at random and judged it by the same puritanical metric they wield against sex workers, every one of them would be exiled to the moon. That is, of course, pointing to the magic word of this whole fuck debacle, hypocrisy. How stupendously sticky is the fact that out of all the people to moralize about pornography, it's the fucking bankers, an industry plagued with sex criminals. Now, we try not to lean too hard on the old Handmaid's Tale or the Wizard Boy Tales comparisons, but it's like straight out of the Handmaid's Tale, when all the moralizing Joseph Fiennes's preach about harlots and indecency before slinking away into their little rape nightclub. And of course, it isn't just the banks. Jeff Toobin tugged on his hog rope in the middle of a Zoom work meeting at the New Yorker, which you may recognize as a thing that is actually against the law and normally earns you a lifetime ban from playgrounds and a permanent subheading on all of your business cards. But CNN gave that skin-fiddling horn balloon his job back after an 8-month suspension. 8 little months. Surely that's worse than grown-ups selling homemade pornography online to other grown-ups. And while I don't have the exact figures in front of me, I am positive no banks stopped doing business with CNN or the New Yorker. Like, really positive. Like, there's simply no way I've selected the false grail, so I'm not even going to ask the Dust Knight and suck that puppy off levels of positive. But apparently, selling sexually explicit material of yourself to consenting adult customers in a private transaction turns all of your money radioactive, leaving the banks no choice but to remove it lest it contaminate all of the respectable cash deposited by pharmaceutical companies charging $300 for a vial of insulin and landlords collecting $3,000 rent checks for an efficiency apartment in a windowless utility closet in Manhattan. Man, this country just hates sex, you know? I'm sure that story is the worst of it, right? Oh, wait, I just remembered. Please don't cut.
Texas v. Women, dawn of what the fuck?
Fuck, man. As in, fuck man, then get pregnant, then be forced to keep the baby lest your entire family get sued by a stranger. Yes, Texas passes draconian anti-abortion law this month, just a shit taco of a law, shit that doesn't even have half a dollar bill in it. And while you've probably seen several think pieces, Twitter threads, TikTok dance videos, fidge flork clipimations, scrooble dink mash pods, and peekaboo blam cams decrying the law's unprecedentedly extreme measures by this point, you still might be horking to yourself, well, it can't be that bad, can it? I assure you, it can. And it is. It's really bad. Sitting down to read this fucking thing is like finding your parents' autopsy photos tucked into the seat back pocket of the chair in front of you as you bend over to cover your head while the plane you're taking to your federal arraignment nosedives into Lake Ontario, the shittiest Great Lake. You're not even going to die in an ocean. Just gonna float there in the wreckage with a bunch of stupid turtles or whatever the hell lives in Lake Ontario. We don't know. Science doesn't know because it's not worth the time or money to investigate. Not even Elon Musk would send a leaky metal tube he drew on the back of a Wendy's napkin to rescue kids trapped in a cave in Lake Ontario. He might not even bother to call any of the rescue divers pedophiles if they even deigned to show up anyway. I mean, it's Lake Ontario. What are you supposed to do with that? Drink it? Nope. No dice, Great Lake. Piece of fucking shit lake. Anyway, reading Texas's new abortion law is a lot like whatever I just said. The new law, which bans abortions performed more than 6 weeks after the patient's last menstrual cycle, is so blatantly, maliciously horrible that the words try to delete themselves from your memory like disappearing ink as you're reading them. But how can that be? You and anyone else who has ever read literally anything about women's reproductive rights are understandably asking, because that's a really good question, genuinely. How can that be when abortion is a constitutionally protected right? Seriously, what the fuck? See? Even the monkey we trapped to write our bumper text wants to know. First of all, the law doesn't target people who receive abortions directly. That would be a little too obvious, like using a banana to catch a monkey that learned how to write. No, instead of targeting anyone who gets an abortion, the law focuses on anyone who assists in an abortion, whether it be the doctor who performed it, friends or relatives who helped pay for it, or even the fucking bus driver who carried you to the clinic. But don't worry, Uber and Lyft have already announced that they will cover the legal fees of any of their drivers who get sued because of the law, which is definitely a new policy on their respective books and not just performative codswallop they never actually intend to make good on, considering both companies' long history of trying as hard as they fucking can to not pay their drivers any benefits or do anything to prevent them from sexually assaulting their passengers. But even then, the Texas Highway Patrol can't just go around rounding up all the cab drivers and abortion doctors because that would be blatantly unconstitutional. Texas lawmakers need the abortion ban to be winkingly unconstitutional, so their buddies in the Supreme Court can pretend that it isn't. In a move that's so dumb it's almost clever, the law doesn't actually grant the government or any state officials the authority to enforce it. What the law does instead is put the onus of enforcement entirely on private citizens, empowering them to enforce the ban with spurious lawsuits. Legal experts consulted by the Texas Tribune claim that the function of pushing enforcement off onto private citizens is to prevent the law from being challenged as unconstitutional. Because, as you may remember, abortion is a right guaranteed by the Supreme Court. That pesky Roe v. Wade ruling guarantees that everyone in America has the right to get an abortion if they so choose. So, in order to avoid getting challenged as unconstitutional, Texas's law effectively deputizes citizens to enforce the abortion ban by giving them carte blanche to sue the pants off of anyone who either performs an abortion or assists in the procedure. It's basically throwing an ostrich into a shark tank and denying any responsibility for what happens next. It's basically exactly like that. This tactical phrasing has already proven to be effective, as the Supreme Court ruled against an emergency request to block the law, citing that because no state officials or employees are able to enforce it, it technically doesn't violate the Constitution. The Supreme Court, as you may recall, is both the highest court in the land and a group of impossibly wealthy lawyers whose membership is 22% alleged sex creep. I'm not saying they don't necessarily have the best interest of people seeking abortions in mind, but two of the justices who decided against labeling Texas's new law unconstitutional ascended to the Supreme Court by publicly humiliating women who made credible allegations of sexual assault and misconduct. It's kind of a fun game, actually. You look at a picture of the Supreme Court and try to guess which ones are the trash ones.
Hint! It's all of them!
The fact that no state officials can enforce the ban hardly matters, because the law extends its sweeping powers to any person other than an officer or employee of a state or local governmental entity in this state. That means total strangers, who have not been harmed in any way themselves, are free to sue literally anyone who even dares to perform or assist with an abortion, regardless of whether they have any connection to the person receiving the abortion or have even met them before. Now, normally, a plaintiff needs to have some connection to a case to sue for damages, which is a legal concept called standing, as in, you need to have legal standing to sue your neighbor for throwing your ostrich into a shark tank. The Texas law effectively removes that barrier, meaning you don't even have to know the ostrich's name or even live on the same street as the shark tank. Plaintiffs under the new law don't even have to provide any evidence that an abortion took place. Remember, there's no burden of proof required to file a civil suit. All you have to do is fill out some paperwork and pay a filing fee. But not that it should matter, because as I mentioned earlier, abortions are legal in America. They are not against the law. You can breakdance in front of a police station, swinging dummy fetuses around like a baton twirler, singing A-B-O-R-T-I-O-N to the tune of Respect, and they can't do shit. They have to sit there and enjoy your performance art. And you really can do that. If you say the A and the B kind of fast, it totally works. What the Texas law effectively does is deputize the state's entire citizenry to do their unconstitutional dirty work for them. And it's not an unconstitutional ban if you don't call it that and have freak vigilantes on next door enforce it for you. Apparently. So why would anyone want to stick their noses into other people's extremely private personal medical business like this? I'm glad you asked, and I'm glad that I heard you ask. The thing is, people love to do that. They do it all the time. Social media has thrived in the past 2 decades specifically because of how much people desperately want to destroy anyone who says or does anything they don't like, regardless of whether it's against the law or even affects them in any way. Much of the reporting around the new law has been focused on the $10,000 reward the state is offering to anyone who files a lawsuit and wins, in addition to covering their court costs and attorney fees. But the fact is, you hardly needed to dangle $10,000 in front of the same people who share pro-life Minions memes to encourage them to use the sue everyone in the state of Texas card you just gave them. That's the other thing. $10,000 is just the starting figure. The law states that any plaintiffs who successfully win a judgment will be awarded no less than 10 grand. 10 grand is the jumping off point. 10 grand is where negotiations begin. That's the legislative equivalent of throwing a party that starts at 6 o'clock and ends at question mark. And as we know from decades of mandatory minimum sentencing practices, there's definitely no room for this open-ended chest of pirates' booty to be exploited. Surely not. One might argue that it is specifically designed to attract people who normally wouldn't dream of participating in a police state surveillance program designed to subjugate pregnant people as brood sow, but out of desperation, find the promise of a $10,000 payday too life-changing to ignore. Glad we're earmarking all that money as cash rewards for enforcing a blatantly unconstitutional ban instead of using it to provide literally any kind of support for the millions of people living in poverty in this country during an historic pandemic. You know, helping the needy and all that other stuff people who legislate against abortion in the name of religion claim to care about. But here, as they say, we are. What's that word again?
Hypocrisy!
Thanks, monkey! One day we'll get you a name. The Texas's snitch reward program also prevents any defendants being sued over an abortion from using the fact that abortions aren't illegal as a defense. To literally quote the law, the defendant's belief that the requirements of this subchapter are unconstitutional or were unconstitutional is not a defense. It's literally built in that you can't say the unconstitutional thing is, in fact, unconstitutional. Apparently, that's a thing you can just do, which kind of seems like it shouldn't be. Kind of seems like once something has been determined to be a federally protected right, you shouldn't be able to pass legislation that makes it illegal to point that out.
Well, sure, women can drive, but anyone who sees a woman driving can sue the car dealership and the auto manufacturer for selling her that car. They don't even need to see her driving. They can just suspect she's driving, or if that's too much trouble, they can go ahead and accuse her of driving with no evidence at all. Now, before you get your constitutional britches all in a hitch, we're not saying she can't drive, or that a dealership can't sell her a car. We're just saying you're not allowed to mention any of those things when somebody sues you for it.
That lawyer just won the case! The law piles on a number of additional factors to tip the balance further in favor of the rusty butt whistles deputized to file all the lawsuits, or as the law refers to them, plaintiffs. The plaintiffs can file suit in any county, even if the abortion took place on the other end of the state, and the defendants are not allowed to request a change of venue unless the plaintiffs also agree to it. Meaning, not only are you getting sued by some jabroni you've never seen before in your life for performing a medical procedure that, once again, is a right guaranteed by the Constitution, but you also have to drive to whatever cockshit courthouse in the state of Texas they filed their paperwork, and according to the law, you're not allowed to recoup any expenses or legal fees regardless of the judgment. The law also includes a stipulation leaving the door open for the state to levy additional fines against the defendant should they happen to violate the law again in the future. Obviously, the intended effect is to bury abortion providers under a mountain of frivolous lawsuits that carry the full support of the state legislature to financially annihilate them until they think twice about helping a vulnerable person exercise their constitutionally guaranteed right. That'll teach them! Yeah, that'll teach them. This law is just so blatantly malicious and gross to the point that even if you were pro-life, you should still find it to be a bad law that opens the doors to a flood of frivolous lawsuits, something I sure thought Republicans didn't like.
You know, I have to say to Mr. Trump, you have been threatening frivolous lawsuits for your entire adult life. Even in the annals of frivolous lawsuits, this takes the cake.
Hey, Ted Cruz, do you remember when you made fun of Trump for filing frivolous lawsuits against you? How did that go for you? Ted and a lot of Texas Republicans have actually been pretty silent about this law, and that probably has to do with the fact that it's extremely hypocritical regarding how they're supposed to feel about frivolous legal proceedings. Not that these freaks care about hypocrisy or even pay a cost because of it, but they literally passed something called the Lawsuit Abuse Reduction Act in 2017. And suddenly they're like, super cool with it for this one thing. And that's weird. Is there a word for that? Or like, hypocrisy. Ah, there it is. It's almost like they've completely lost their moral compass and don't actually believe in anything. You know, since the Texas law has created so many unprecedented loopholes that can be applied to so many other things and has essentially stabbed our justice system in the stomach, they are showing with this law that they would rather topple the entire sandcastle than share their toys, clusterfuck their laws, rather than not get their way. And that's, wowee, a sure sign of a declining ideology if I ever saw one. I'm sorry, folks. I don't think we're gonna maximize our content reach with this one. Certainly not after the Southern lawyer voice I attempted earlier, but mainly, I blame the country. It's hard to get anyone excited about US news when it's just a blanketing flow of hypocrisy mixed with a terrifying lack of accountability. You know, you got your Proud Boys and GOP drumming up this election hogwash and the minimal efforts to prevent another January 6th, stuff that truly should make your skin crawl happening in Texas, drone strikes against kids, and open lies from the military. And what people mainly wanted to talk about was AOC's dress and demonizing sex work. Real threats being completely ignored, while fake threats get that weird Bill Maher outrage. Everyone bogged down with superficial battles so the real sinister shit can happen without us realizing. Like two superheroes tricked into fighting each other while the actual villain sneaks by in some movie I just made up that I don't think exists. Here's what I do know. I know that the majority of Americans think abortion should remain legal and disapprove of what the Supreme Court did. I know that our views of sex work, particularly thanks to the young people, have grown far more positive over the years. That we want to tax the rich more, and that most Americans accepted the reality that Biden won the election. But like this recall election, we're constantly forced to stop, confirm the obvious, and hope the stragglers will catch up. So yeah, there's some frustrating stuff here, but not all of it is a sad ending. And it's a good case to make for why we can't look away from this, why we'll keep updating you for better or for worse. Because, you know, we're pointed in the right direction, maybe. Except for the drone stuff. We love drones for some reason. But hey, that other stuff. Yeah. So like, stay vigilant, but not in like a vigilante way, and involved. Vote in those goofball recall elections, no matter how much monkey and or cheetah business seems to be involved. Call your representatives and tell them how much of your farts the Texas abortion ban can eat. Ideally, all of them. All of the farts. Tell them to tax the motherfucking rich, but be sure to clarify more in case Bill Maher is listening. And you know, in general, just stay vigilant for Bill Maher. He's gonna show up like the Babadook sometimes. It's terrifying. So keep your head on a swivel. Good night, you princes of Maine, you kings of news. It's milk and cookies from the beginning of the episode. It's a callback to the beginning, but not like a strong one because we kind of like dropped the whole thing. And also like I'm miming it. So Santa. Hey, wow. Oh my gosh. The video's over. So make sure to like it and subscribe to the channel that it's on and leave a comment that's nice, please. And we've also got a podcast called Even More News and this as a podcast called Some More News, where all your podcasts can be found. And also patreon.com/somemorenews and merch with fucking Warmbo on it. So that's good. For making it to the end of the video, you get one half of a poop dollar. It's just the paper. I use paper instead of a dollar in the episode. Did that work? Or was it like, why is he using paper? It's not, I don't know. I don't know.